figure.
Your favor? Aelin said as they hauled him to his feet.
The Vogue commander thrashed and stumbled in their grip as they led him toward the house, the hood over his head swaying this way and that. A low, vicious hissing noise crept out from under the coarse-knit fibers.
I would have preferred the servant's door for our guest, Aerobin said tightly.
He was in green. Green for Terrasen, though most would assume it was to offset his auburn hair, a way to confuse their assumptions about his intentions, his allegiance. He wore no weapons, she could see, and there was nothing but warmth in those silver eyes as he held out his hands to her, as if Adian wasn't now tugging a demon up the front steps. Behind them, Nezrin steered the carriage away. She could feel Rowan bristling, sense Adian's disgust, but she blocked them out. She took Aerobin's hands, dry, warm, calloused. He squeezed her fingers gently, peering into her face.
You look ravishing.
But I'd expect nothing less. Not even a bruise after trapping our guest.
Impressive.
He leaned closer, sniffing.
And you smell divine, too. I'm glad my gift was put to good use.
From the corner of her eye, she saw Rowan straighten, and she knew he'd slid into the killing calm. Neither Rowan nor Adian wore visible weapons save for the single blade her cousin now had out. But she knew they were both armed beneath their clothes, and knew Rowan would snap Aerobin's neck if he so much as blinked wrong at her. It was that thought alone that made her smile at Aerobin.
You look well, she said. I suppose you already know my companions.
He faced Adian, who was busy digging his sword into the commander's side, as a gentle reminder to keep moving.
I haven't had the pleasure of meeting your cousin.
She knew Aerobin took in every detail as Adian came closer, pushing his charge before him, trying to find any weakness, anything to use to his advantage. Adian just continued into the house, the Vogue commander stumbling across the threshold.
You've recovered well, General, Aerobin said. Or should I call you Your Highness, in honor of your Ash River lineage?
Whichever you prefer, of course.
She knew then that Aerobin had no plans to let the demon and Stavon leave this house alive. Adian gave Aerobin a lazy grin over his shoulder.
I don't give a shit what you call me.
He shoved the Vogue commander farther inside.
Just take this rutting thing off my hands.
Aerobin smiled blandly. Unfazed, he'd calculated Adian's hatred. With deliberate slowness, he turned to Rowan.
You, I don't know, Aerobin mused,
having to lift his head to see Rowan's face. He made a show of looking Rowan over.
It's been an age since I saw one of the Fae.
I don't remember them being quite so large.
Rowan moved deeper into the entry hall, every step laced with power and death, coming to a stop at her side.
You can call me Rowan. That's all you need to know.
He cocked his head to the side, a predator assessing prey.
Thank you for the oil, he added. My skin was a little dry.
Aerobin blinked, as much surprise as he'd show. It took her a moment to process what Rowan had said, and to realize that the almond smell hadn't just been coming from her. He'd worn it too. Aerobin flicked his attention to Adian and the Vogue commander.
Third door on the left. Take him downstairs. Use the fourth cell.
Aelin didn't dare look at her cousin as he dragged Stavon along. There was no sign of the other assassins, not even a servant. Whatever Aerobin had planned, he didn't want any witnesses. Aerobin trailed after Adian, his hands in his pockets. But Aelin remained in the hall for a moment, looking at Rowan. His brows were high as she read the words in his eyes, his posture.
He never specified that only you had to wear it.
Her throat tightened, and she shook her head.
What?
He seemed to ask.
You just...
She shook her head again. Surprise me sometimes.
Good. I'd hate for you to get bored.
Despite herself, despite what was to come, a smile tugged on her lips, as Rowan took her hand and gripped it tightly. When she turned to head into the dungeons, her smile faded as she found Aerobin watching. Rowan was about a hair's breadth from ripping out the King of the Assassins' throat as he led them down, down, down into the dungeons. Rowan kept a step behind Aelin while they descended the long, curving stone staircase, the reek of mildew and blood and rust growing stronger with each step. He'd been tortured enough, and done enough torturing himself, to know what this place was. To know what sort of training Aelin had received down here. A girl. She'd been a girl when the red-haired bastard a few steps ahead had brought her here, and taught her how to cut up men, how to keep them alive while she did it, how to make them scream and plead, how to end them. There was no part of her that disgusted him, no part of her that scared him, but the thought of her in this place, with these smells, in this darkness. With every step down the stairs, Aelin's shoulders seemed to droop, her hair seeming to grow duller, her skin paler. This was where she'd last seen Sam, he realized, and her master knew it. "We use this for most of our meetings, harder to eavesdrop or be caught unawares," Aerobin said to no one in particular. "Though it also has other uses, as you'll soon see." He opened door after door, and it seemed to Rowan that Aelin was counting them, waiting until... "Shall we?" Aerobin said, gesturing toward the cell door. Rowan touched her elbow. Gods, his self-control had to be in shreds tonight. He couldn't stop making excuses to touch her. But this touch was essential. Her eyes met his, dim and cold.
"You give the word. Just one damn word and he's dead. And then we can search this house from top to bottom for that amulet."
She shook her head as she entered the cell. And he understood it well enough. Not yet. Not yet. She'd almost balked on the stairs to the dungeons. And it was only the thought of the amulet, only the warmth of the Fey warrior at her back that made her put one foot in front of the other and descend into the dark stone interior. She would never forget this room. It still haunted her dreams. The table was empty, but she could see him there, broken and almost unrecognizable, the scent of Gloriella clinging to his body. Sam had been tortured in ways she hadn't even known until she read Wesley's letter. The worst of it had been requested by Aerobin. Requested as punishment for Sam's loving her. Punishment for tampering with Aerobin's belongings. Aerobin sauntered into the room, hands in his pockets. Rowan's sharp sniff told her enough about what this place smelled like. Such a dark, cold room where they'd put Sam's body. Such a dark, cold room where she'd vomited, and then lain beside him on that table for hours and hours, unwilling to leave him. Where Adian now chained Stavon to the wall. "Get out," Aerobin said simply to Rowan and Adian, who stiffened. "The two of you can wait upstairs. We don't need any unnecessary distractions, and neither does our guest." "Over my rotting corpse," Adian snapped. Aelin shot him a sharp look.
"Lysandra is waiting for you in the drawing room," Aerobin said with expert politeness,
his eyes now fixed on the hooded Volg chained to the wall. Stavon's gloved hands tugged at the chains, his incessant hissing rising with impressive violence.
"She'll entertain you. We'll be up for dinner shortly."
Rowan was watching Aelin very, very carefully. She gave him a slight nod. Rowan met Adian's gaze. The general stared right back. Honestly, had she been anywhere else, she might have pulled up a chair to watch this latest little dominance battle. Thankfully, Adian just turned toward the stairs. A moment later, they were gone. Aerobin stalked to the demon and snatched the hood from his head. Black, rage-filled eyes glared at them and blinked, scanning the room. "We can do this the easy way or the hard way," Aerobin drawled. Stavon just smiled. Aelin listened to Aerobin interrogate the demon, demanding to know what it was, where it had come from, what the king wanted. After 30 minutes and minimal slicing, the demon was talking about anything and everything,
How does the king control you?
Aerobin pushed.
The demon laughed. Wouldn't you like to know?
Aerobin half-turned to her, holding up his dagger, a trickle of dark blood sliding down the blade.
Would you like to do the honors? This is for your benefit, after all.
She frowned at her dress. I don't want to get blood on it.
Aerobin smirked and slashed his dagger down the man's pectoral. The demon screeched, drowning out the pitter-patter of blood on the stones.
The ring, it panted after a moment. We've all got them.
Aerobin paused, and Aelin cocked her head.
Left. Left hand, it said.
Aerobin yanked off the man's glove, revealing the black ring. How?
He has a ring, too. Uses it to control us all. Ring goes on, and it doesn't come off. We do what he says, whatever he says.
Where did he get the rings from?
Made 'em. I don't know.
The dagger came closer.
I swear. We wear the rings, and he makes a cut on our arms. Licks our blood so it's in him, and then he can control us however he wants. It's the blood that links us.
And what does he plan to do with you all, now that you're invading my city?
We're searching for the general. I won't tell anyone he's here. Or that she's here, I swear. The rest, I don't know.
His eyes met hers. Dark, pleading.
Kill him, she said to Aerobin. He's a liability. Please,
Stevan said, his eyes still holding hers. She looked away. He does seem to have run out of things to tell me, Aerobin mused.
Swift as an adder, Aerobin lunged for him, and Stevan screamed so loudly it hurt her ears as Aerobin sliced off his finger
and the ring that held it, in one brutal movement. Thank you, Aerobin said above Stevan's screaming, and then slashed his knife across the man's throat.
Aelin stepped clear of the spray of blood, holding Stevan's stare as the light faded from his gaze.
When the spray had slowed, she frowned at Aerobin.
You could have killed him and then cut off the ring.
Where would the fun be in that?
Aerobin held up the bloody finger and pried off the ring.
Lost your bloodlust?
I'd dump that ring in the aviary if I were you.
The king is enslaving people to his will with these things. I plan to study this one as best I can.
Of course he did. He pocketed the ring and inclined his head toward the door.
Now that we're even, darling, shall we eat?
It was an effort to nod, with Stevan's still bleeding body sagging from the wall. Aelin was seated to Aerobin's right, as she'd always been. She'd expected Lysandra to be across from her, but instead the courtesan was beside her, no doubt meant to reduce her options to two. Deal with her longtime rival or talk to Aerobin, or something like that. She had bid hello to Lysandra, who'd been keeping Adian and Rowan company in the drawing room, keenly aware of Aerobin on her heels as she shook Lysandra's hand, subtly passing over the note she'd kept hidden in her dress all night. The note was gone by the time Aelin leaned in to kiss the courtesan's cheek, the peck of someone not entirely thrilled to be doing so. Aerobin had seated Rowan to his left, with Adian beside the warrior. The two members of her court were separated by the table to keep them from reaching her, and to leave her unprotected from Aerobin. Neither had asked what happened in the dungeon.
I have to say,
Aerobin mused as their first course, tomato and basil soup, courtesy of vegetables grown in the hothouse in the back, was cleared away by silent servants who had been summoned now that Stevan had been dealt with. Aelin recognized some, though they didn't look at her. They had never looked at her, even when she was living here. She knew they wouldn't dare whisper a word about who dined at this table tonight. Not with Aerobin as their master.
You're a rather quiet group.
Or has my protege scared you into silence? Adian, who had watched every bite she took of that soup, lifted an eyebrow.
You want us to make small talk after you just interrogated and butchered a demon?
Aerobin waved a hand.
I'd like to hear more about you all.
Careful, she said too quietly to Aerobin. The King of the Assassins straightened the silverware flanking his plate.
Shouldn't I be concerned about who my protégé is living with?
You weren't concerned about who I was living with when you had me shipped off to Endovir.
A slow blink. Is that what you think I did?
Lysandra stiffened beside her. Aerobin noted the movement, as he noted every movement, and said,
Lysandra can tell you the truth. I fought tooth and nail to free you from that prison. I lost half my men to the effort, all of them tortured and killed by the king. I'm surprised your friend the captain didn't tell you. Such a pity he's on rooftop watch tonight.
He missed nothing, it seemed. Aerobin looked to Lysandra, waiting. She swallowed and murmured. He did try, you know, for months and months.
It was so convincing that Aelin might have believed it. Through some miracle, Aerobin had no idea that the woman had been meeting with them in secret.
Some miracle, or Lysandra's own wits.
Aelin drawled to Aerobin, Do you plan on telling me why you insisted we stay for dinner?
How else would I get to see you? You would have just dumped that thing on my doorstep and left. And we learned so much. So much that we could use. Together.
The chill down her spine wasn't faked.
Though I have to say this new you is much more subdued.
I suppose for Lysandra that's a good thing.
She always looks at the hole you left in the entry wall when you threw that dagger at her head. I kept it there, as a little reminder of how much we all missed you.
Rowan was watching her, an asp ready to strike, but his brows bunched slightly, as if to say,
You really threw a dagger at her head?
Aerobin began talking about a time Aelin had brawled with Lysandra and they'd rolled down the stairs, scratching and yowling like cats. So Aelin looked at Rowan a moment longer. I was a tad hot-headed.
I'm beginning to admire Lysandra more and more. 17-year-old Aelin must have been a delight to deal with.
She fought the twitching in her lips. I would pay good money to see 17-year-old Aelin meet 17-year-old Rowan. His green eyes glittered. Aerobin was still talking.
17-year-old Rowan wouldn't have known what to do with you. He could barely speak to females outside his family.
Liar. I don't believe that for a second.
It's true. You would have scandalized him with your nightclothes. Even with that dress you have on.
She sucked on her teeth. He would probably have been even more scandalized. To learn I'm not wearing any undergarments beneath this dress.
The table rattled as Rowan's knee banged into it.
Aerobin paused, but continued when Adian asked about what the demon had told him.
You can't be serious,
Rowan seemed to say. Did you see any place where this dress might hide them? Every line and wrinkle would show.
Rowan shook his head subtly, his eyes dancing with a light that she'd only recently come to glimpse and cherish.
Do you delight in shocking me?
She couldn't stop her smile. How else am I supposed to keep a cranky immortal entertained?
Her grin was distracting enough that it took her a moment to notice the silence, and that everyone was staring at them, waiting. She glanced at Aerobin, whose face was a mask of stone.
Did you ask me something?
There was only calculating ire in his silver eyes, which might have once made her start begging for mercy.
I asked, Aerobin said.
If you've had fun these past few weeks, wrecking my investment properties and ensuring that all my clients won't touch me.
Chapter 43 Aelin leaned back in her chair. Even Rowan was staring at her now, surprise and annoyance written on his face. Lysandra was doing a good job of feigning shock and confusion, even though it had been she who had fed Aelin the details, who had made her plan so much better and broader than it had been when Aelin scribbled it out on that ship.
I don't know what you're talking about, she said with a little smile.
Oh?
Aerobin swirled his wine.
You mean to tell me that when you wrecked the vault beyond repair, it wasn't a move against my investment in that property? And my monthly cut of their profits?
Don't pretend it was just vengeance for Sam.
The king's men showed up. I had no choice but to fight for my life.
After she led them directly from the docks to the pleasure hall, of course.
And I suppose it was an accident that the lockbox was hacked open so its contents could be snatched up by the crowd.
It had worked. Worked so spectacularly that she was surprised Arobin had lasted this long without going for her throat.
You know how those lowlifes get. A little chaos and they turn into animals foaming at the mouth.
Lysandra cringed. A stellar performance of a woman witnessing a betrayal.
Indeed,
Arobin said.
But especially the lowlifes at establishments from which I receive a handsome monthly sum, correct?
So you invited me and my friends here tonight to fling accusations at me? Here I was, thinking I'd become your personal Vog Hunter.
You deliberately disguised yourself as Hinsel Cormac, one of my most loyal clients and investors, when you freed your cousin.
Arobin snapped. Adian's eyes widened slightly.
I could dismiss it as coincidence, except a witness says he called out Cormac's name at the prince's party, and Cormac waved to him. The witness told the king that, too, that he saw Cormac heading toward Adian right before the explosions happened.
And what a coincidence
that the very day Adian disappeared, two carriages belonging to a business that Cormac and I owned together went missing. Carriages Cormac then told all my clients and partners that I used to get Adian to safety when I freed the general that day by impersonating him, because I, apparently, have become a god's damned rebel sympathizer strutting about town at all hours of the day.
She dared a look at Rowan, whose face remained carefully blank, but saw the words there anyway.
You wicked, clever fox.
And here you were, thinking the red hair was just for vanity.
I shall never doubt again.
She turned to Arobin. I can't help it if your prissy clients turn on you at the slightest hint of danger.
Cormac has fled the city,
and continues to drag my name through the mud. It's a miracle the king hasn't come to haul me to his castle.
If you're worried about losing money, you could always sell the house, I suppose, or stop using Lysandra's services.
Arobin hissed, and Rowan and Adian reached casually under the table for their hidden weapons.
What will it take, dearest, for you to stop being such a raging pain in my ass?
There they were, the words she'd wanted to hear. The reason she'd been so careful not to wreck him altogether, but merely to annoy him just enough. She picked at her nails.
A few things, I think.
The sitting room was oversized, and made to entertain parties of 20 or 30, with couches and chairs and chaises spread throughout. Aelin lounged in an armchair before the fire, Arobin across from her, fury still dancing in his eyes. She could feel Rowan and Adian in the hall outside, monitoring every word, every breath. She wondered whether Arobin knew they'd disobeyed his command to remain in the dining room. She doubted it. They were stealthier than ghost leopards, those two. But she didn't want them in here, either. Not until she'd done what she needed to do. She crossed one leg over the other, revealing the simple black velvet shoes she wore, and her bare legs.
So all of this was punishment for a crime I didn't commit,
Arobin said at last. She ran a finger down the rolled arm of the chair.
First thing, Arobin. Let's not bother with lies.
I suppose you've told your friends the truth.
My court knows everything there is to know about me. And they know everything you've done, too.
Casting yourself as the victim, are you?
You're forgetting that it didn't take much encouragement to put those knives in your hands.
I am what I am. But it doesn't erase the fact that you knew very well who I was when you found me. You took my family necklace off me, and told me that anyone who came looking for me would wind up killed by my enemies. She didn't dare let her breathing hitch. Didn't let him consider the words too much as she plowed ahead. You wanted to shape me into your own weapon. Why?
Why not? I was young and angry, and my kingdom had just been conquered by that bastard king. I believed I could give you the tools you needed to survive, to someday defeat him. That is why you've come back, isn't it?
I'm surprised you and the captain haven't killed him yet.
Isn't that what he wants? Why he tried to work with me? Or are you claiming that kill for yourself?
You honestly expect me to believe that your end goal was to have me avenge my family and reclaim my throne?
Who would you have become without me?
Some pampered, quaking princess. Your beloved cousin would have locked you up in a tower and thrown away the key. I gave you your freedom. I gave you the ability to bring down men like Adian Ashriver with a few blows.
And all I get for it is contempt.
She clenched her fingers, feeling the weight of the pebbles she'd carried that morning to Sam's grave.
So what else do you have in store for me, O mighty queen?
Shall I save you the trouble and tell you how else you might continue to be a thorn in my side? You know the debt isn't anywhere near paid.
Debt? For what? For trying to free you from Endovir.
And when that didn't work, I did the best I could. I bribed those guards and officials with money from my own coffers so that they wouldn't hurt you beyond repair.
All the while, I tried to find ways to get you out, for a year straight.
Lies and truth, as he'd always taught her. Yes, he'd bribed the officials and guards to ensure she would still be functioning when he eventually freed her. But Wesley's letter had explained in detail just how little effort Aerobin had put forth once it became clear she was headed for Endovir, how he'd adjusted his plans, embracing the idea of her spirit being broken by the mines.
And what about Sam? She breathed. Sam was murdered by a sadist, whom my useless bodyguard got it into his head to kill. You know I couldn't allow that to go unpunished. Not when we needed the new crime lord to continue working with us.
Truth and lies, lies and truth. She shook her head and looked toward the window, ever the confused and conflicted protege falling for Aerobin's poisoned words.
Tell me what I need to do to make you understand,
he said.
Do you know why I had you capture that demon? So that we could attain its knowledge. So you and I could take on the king, learn what he knows. Why do you think I let you in that room? Together.
We'll bring that monster down together, before we're all wearing those rings. Your friend the captain can even join in, free of charge.
You expect me to believe a word you say?
I have had a long, long while to think on the wretched things I've done to you, Selena.
Aelin, she snapped. My name is Aelin. And you can start proving you've mended your ways by giving me back my family's god's damned amulet. Then you can prove it some more by giving me your resources, by letting me use your men to get what I need.
She could see the wheels turning in that cold and cunning head.
In what capacity?
No word about the amulet. No denying he had it.
You want to take down the king, she murmured,
as if to keep the two fey males outside the door from hearing.
Then let's take down the king. But we do it my way. The captain and my court stay out of it.
What's in it for me?
These are dangerous times, you know. Why, just today, one of the top opiate dealers was caught by the king's men and killed.
Such a pity.
He escaped the slaughter at the Shadow Market only to be caught buying dinner a few blocks away.
More nonsense to distract her. She merely said, I won't send a tip to the king about this place, about how you operate and who your clients are, or mention the demon in your dungeon, its blood now a permanent stain. She smiled a little. I've tried. Their blood doesn't wash away.
Threats, Aelin?
And what if I make threats of my own? What if I mention to the king's guard that his missing general and his captain of the guard are frequently visiting a certain warehouse?
What if I let it slip that a fey warrior is wandering his city? Or worse, that his mortal enemy is living in the slums?
I suppose it'll be a race to the palace, then.
It's too bad the captain has men stationed by the castle gates, messages in hand, ready for the signal to send them this very night.
You'd have to get out of here alive to give that signal.
The signal is us not returning, I'm afraid. All of us.
Again that cold stare.
How cruel and ruthless you've become, my love. But will you become a tyrant as well? Perhaps you should start slipping rings onto the fingers of your followers.
He reached into his tunic. She kept her posture relaxed as a golden chain glinted around his long white fingers, and then a tinkling sounded, and then... The amulet was exactly as she remembered it. It had been with a child's hands that she'd last held it, and with a child's eyes that she'd last seen the cerulean blue front with the ivory stag, and the golden star between its antlers. The immortal stag of Mala Firebringer, brought over to these lands by Brannon himself, and set free in Oakwald Forest. The amulet glinted in Aerobin's hands as he removed it from his neck. The third and final word key. It had made her ancestors mighty queens and kings, had made Terrasen untouchable, a powerhouse so lethal no force had ever breached its borders, until she'd fallen into the Florine River that night, until this man had removed the amulet from around her neck, and a conquering army had swept through. And Aerobin had risen from being a local lord of assassins to crown himself this continent's unrivaled king of their guild. Perhaps his power and influence derived solely from the necklace. Her necklace, that he'd worn all these years.
"I've become rather attached to it," Aerobin said as he handed it over.
He'd known she would ask for it tonight, if he was wearing it. Perhaps he'd planned to offer it to her all along, just to win her trust. Or get her to stop framing his clients and interrupting his business. Keeping her face neutral was an effort as she reached for it. Her fingers grazed the golden chain, and she wished then and there that she'd never heard of it, never touched it, never been in the same room with it.
"Not right," her blood sang, her bones groaned. "Not right, not right, not right."
The amulet was heavier than it looked, and warm from his body, or from the boundless power dwelling inside of it.
The word key. Holy gods.
That quickly, that easily he'd handed it over. How Aerobin hadn't felt it, noticed it. Unless you needed magic in your veins to feel it. Unless it never called to him, as it did to her now. Its raw power brushing up against her senses like a cat rubbing along her legs. How had her mother, her father, any of them never felt it? She almost walked out right then and there, but she slid the amulet of Orinth around her neck, its weight becoming heavier still, a force pressing down on her bones, spreading through her blood like ink in water.
"Not right."
"Tomorrow morning," she said coldly, "you and I are going to talk again. Bring your best men, or whoever is licking your boots these days. And then we are going to plan." She rose from the chair, her knees wobbling.
"Any other requests, Your Majesty?"
"You think I don't realize you have the upper hand?" She willed calm to her veins, her heart. "You've agreed to help me far too easily. But I like this game. Let's keep playing it." His answering smile was serpentine. Each step toward the door was an effort of will, as she forced herself not to think about the thing thudding between her breasts.
"If you betray us tonight, Aerobin," she added, pausing before the door, "I'll make what was done to Sam seem like a mercy compared to what I do to you."
"Learned some new tricks these past few years, have you?"
She smirked, taking in the details of how he looked at this exact moment, the sheen of his red hair, his broad shoulders and narrow waist, the scars on his hands, and those silver eyes, so bright with challenge and triumph. They'd probably haunt her dreams until the day she died.
"One more thing," Aerobin said.
It was an effort to lift a brow as he came close enough to kiss her, embrace her, but he just took her hand in his thumb caressing her palm.
"I'm going to enjoy having you back," he purred.
Then, faster than she could react, he slid the wordstone ring onto her finger. Chapter 44 The hidden dagger Aelin had drawn clattered to the wooden floor the moment the cool black stone slid against her skin. She blinked at the ring, at the line of blood that had appeared on her hand beneath Aerobin's sharp thumbnail,
as he raised her hand to his mouth and brushed his tongue along the back of her palm. Her blood was on his lips as he straightened. Such a silence in her head, even now. Her face stopped working. Her heart stopped working.
Blink,
he ordered her. She did.
Smile.
She did.
Tell me why you came back.
To kill the king. To kill the prince.
Arobin leaned in close, his nose grazing her neck.
Tell me that you love me.
I love you.
My name. Say my name when you tell me that you love me.
I love you, Arobin Hommel.
His breath warmed her skin as he huffed a laugh onto her neck, then brushed a kiss where it met her shoulder.
I think I'm going to like this.
He pulled back, admiring her blank face, her features, now empty and foreign.
Take my carriage. Go home and sleep. Do not tell anyone of this. Do not show your friends the ring. And tomorrow, report here after breakfast. We have plans, you and I, for our kingdom and Otterlin.
She just stared, waiting.
Do you understand?
Yes.
He lifted her hand again and kissed the word stone ring.
Good night, Aelin,
he murmured, his hand grazing her backside as he shooed her out. Rowan was trembling with restrained rage as they took Arobin's carriage home, none of them speaking. He'd heard every word uttered inside that room. So had Adian. He'd seen the final touch Arobin had made, the proprietary gesture of a man convinced that he had a new, very shiny toy to play with. But Rowan didn't dare grab for Aelin's hand to see the ring. She didn't move. She didn't speak. She just sat there and stared at the wall of the carriage. A perfect, broken, obedient doll.
I love you, Arobin Hommel.
Every minute was an agony, but there were too many eyes on them. Too many. Even as they finally reached the warehouse and climbed out. They waited until Arobin's carriage had driven off, before Rowan and Adian flanked the queen as she slipped inside the warehouse and up the stairs. The curtains were already shut inside the house, a few candles left burning. The flames caught on the golden dragon embroidered on the back of that remarkable gown, and Rowan didn't dare breathe as she just stood in the center of the room, a slave awaiting orders.
Aelin?
Adian said, his voice hoarse. Aelin lifted her hands in front of her and turned. She pulled off the ring.
So that was what he wanted. I honestly expected something grander.
Aelin slapped the ring down on the small table behind the couch. Rowan frowned at it.
He didn't check Stevan's other hand.
No,
she said, still trying to clear the horror of betrayal from her mind, trying to ignore the thing hanging from her neck, the abyss of power that beckoned, beckoned. Adian snapped. One of you needs to explain now. Her cousin's face was drained of color, his eyes so wide that the whites shone all around them as he glanced from the ring to Aelin and back again. She'd held it together during the carriage ride, maintaining the mask of the puppet Arobin believed she'd become. She crossed the room, keeping her arms at her sides to avoid chucking the word key against the wall.
I'm sorry, she said. You couldn't know.
I could have running known. You really think I can't keep my mouth shut?
Rowan didn't even know until last night, she snapped.
Deep in that abyss, thunder rumbled.
Oh, gods. Oh, gods.
Is that supposed to make me feel better?
Rowan crossed his arms.
It is, considering the fight we had about it.
Adian shook his head.
Just explain.
Aelin picked up the ring. Focus. She could focus on this conversation until she could safely hide the amulet. Adian couldn't know what she carried, what weapon she'd claimed tonight.
In Wendlin, there was a moment when Narok came back, when he warned me and thanked me for ending him. So I picked the Vogue commander who seemed to have the least amount of control over the human's body, out of hope that the man might be in there
wishing for redemption in some form. Redemption for what the demon had made him do. Hoping to die, knowing he'd done one good thing.
Why?
Speaking normally was an effort. So I could offer him the mercy of death and freedom from the Vog. If he would only tell Aerobin all the wrong information. He tricked Aerobin into thinking that a bit of blood could control these rings, and that the ring he bore was the real thing. She held up the ring. I got the idea from you, actually. Lysandra has a very good jeweler, and had a fake made. The real thing I cut off the Vog commander's finger. If Aerobin had taken off his other glove, he would have found him without a digit.
You'd need weeks to plan all that.
Aelin nodded.
But why?
Why bother with any of it? Why not just kill the prick?
Aelin set down the ring. I had to know.
Know what? That Aerobin is a monster?
That there was no redeeming him. I knew, but it was his final test. To show his hand.
Adian hissed. He would have made you into his own personal figurehead. He touched!
I know what he touched. And what he wanted to do.
She could still feel that touch on her. It was nothing compared to the hideous weight pressing against her chest. She rubbed her thumb across the scabbed over slice on her hand.
So now we know.
Some small pathetic part of her wished she didn't.
Still in their finery, Aelin and Rowan stared at the amulet lying on the low table before the darkened fireplace in her bedroom. She'd taken it off the moment she entered the room, Adian having gone to the roof to take watch, and slumped onto the couch facing the table. Rowan took a seat beside her a heartbeat later. For a minute, they said nothing. The amulet gleamed in the light of the two candles Rowan had lit.
I was going to ask you to make sure it wasn't a fake. That Aerobin hadn't switched it, somehow.
Rowan said at last, his eyes fixed on the word key.
But I can feel it. A glimmer of whatever is inside that thing.
She braced her forearms on her knees, the black velvet of her dress softly caressing. In the past, people must have assumed that feeling came from the magic of whoever was wearing it, she said. With my mother? With Brannon? It would never have been noticed.
And your father and uncle? They had little to no magic, you said.
The ivory stag seemed to stare at her, the immortal star between its horns flickering like molten gold. But they had presence. What better place to hide this thing than around the neck of a swaggering royal? Rowan tensed as she reached for the amulet, and flipped it over as quickly as she could. The metal was warm, its surface unmarred despite the millennia that had passed since its forging. There, exactly as she had remembered, were carved three word marks.
Any idea what those mean?
Rowan said, shifting close enough that his thigh grazed hers. He moved away an inch, though it did nothing to stop her from feeling the heat of him. I've never seen...
That one,
Rowan said, pointing to the first one.
I've seen that one. It burned on your brow that day.
Brannon's mark, she breathed. The mark of the bastard born. The nameless.
No one in Terrasen ever looked into these symbols?
If they did, it was never revealed. Or they wrote it in their personal accounts, which were stored in the library of Orinth. She chewed on the inside of her lip. It was one of the first places the King of Otterland sacked.
Maybe the librarians smuggled out the ruler's accounts first. Maybe they got lucky.
Her heart sank a bit. Maybe. We won't know until we return to Terrasen. She tapped her foot on the carpet. I need to hide this. There was a loose floorboard in her closet under which she stashed money, weapons, and jewelry. It would be good enough for now. And Adian wouldn't question it, since she couldn't risk wearing the damn thing in public anyway. Even under her clothes. Not until she was back in Terrasen. She stared down at the amulet.
So do it,
he said. I don't want to touch it.
If it was that easy to trigger, your ancestors would have figured out what it was.
You pick it up, she said, frowning.
He just gave her a look.
She bent down, willing her mind blank while she lifted the amulet off the table. Rowan stiffened as if bracing himself, despite his reassurance. The key was a millstone in her hand, but that initial sense of wrongness, of an abyss of power, It was quiet, slumbering. She made quick work of pulling back the rug in her closet and yanking loose the floorboard. She felt Rowan come up behind her, peering over her shoulder where she knelt and into the small compartment. She had picked up the amulet to drop it into the little space when a thread tugged inside her. No, not a thread, but a wind, as if some force barreled from Rowan into her, as if their bond were a living thing, and she could feel what it was to be him. She dropped the amulet into the compartment. It thudded only once, a dead weight.
What?
Rowan asked. She twisted to peer up at him. I felt you.
How?
So she told him, about his essence sliding into her, a feeling like she wore his skin, if only for a heartbeat. He didn't look entirely pleased.
That sort of ability could be a helpful tool for later.
She scowled. Typical warrior brute thinking. He shrugged. Gods, how did he handle it? The weight of his power. He could crush bones into dust even without his magic. He could bring this whole building down with a few well-placed blows. She'd known. Of course she'd known. But to feel it, the most powerful purebred fey male in existence. To an ordinary human, he was as alien as the Vogue. But I think you're right. It can't just blindly act on my will, she said at last. Or else my ancestors would have raised Orinth to the ground any time they were royally pissed off. I think these things might be neutral by nature. It's the bearer who guides how they are used. In the hands of someone pure of heart, it would only be beneficial. That was how Terrasen thrived. Rowan snorted as she replaced the wooden plank, tamping it down with the heel of her hand.
Trust me, your ancestors weren't utterly holy.
He offered her a hand up, and she tried not to stare at it as she gripped it. Hard, calloused, unbreakable, nearly impossible to kill. But there was a gentleness to his grip, a care reserved only for those he cherished and protected. I don't think any of them were assassins, she said as he dropped her hand. The keys can corrupt an already black heart, or amplify a pure one. I've never heard anything about hearts that are somewhere in between.
The fact that you worry says enough about your intentions.
She stepped all around the area to ensure that no creaking boards gave away the hiding place. Thunder rumbled above the city. I'm going to pretend that's not an omen, she muttered.
Good luck with that.
He nudged her with an elbow as they re-entered the bedroom.
We'll keep an eye on things.
And if you appear to be heading toward Dark Lorddom, I promise to bring you back to the light.
Funny. The little clock on her nightstand chimed, and thunder boomed again through Rifthold. A swift-moving storm. Good. Maybe it would clear her head, too. She went to the box Lysandra had brought her and pulled out the other item.
Lysandra's jeweler, Rowan said, is a very talented person.
Aelin held up a replica of the amulet. She'd gotten the size, coloring, and weight almost perfect. She set it on her vanity like a discarded piece of jewelry, just in case anyone asks where it went. The downpour had softened to a steady drizzle by the time the clock struck one, yet Aelin hadn't come down from the roof. She'd gone up there to take over Adian's watch, apparently, and Rowan had waited, biding his time as the clock neared midnight, and then passed it. Kaol had come by to give Adian a report on the movements of Aerobin's men, but slipped back out around 12. Rowan was done waiting. She was standing in the rain, facing westward. Not toward the glowing castle to her right, not toward the sea at her back, but across the city. He didn't mind that she'd gotten that glimpse into him. He wanted to tell her that he didn't care what she knew about him, so long as it didn't scare her away. And would have told her before if he still hadn't been so stupidly distracted by how she looked tonight. The lamplight glinted off the combs in her hair, and along the golden dragon on the dress.
You'll ruin that dress standing out here in the rain, he said.
She half turned toward him. The rain had left streaks of coal down her face, and her skin was as pale as a fish's belly. The look in her eyes, guilt, anger, agony,
hit him like a blow to the gut. She turned again toward the city.
I was never going to wear this dress again anyway.
You know I'll take care of it tonight,
he said, stepping beside her,
if you don't want to be the one to do it.
And after what that bastard had tried to do to her, what he'd planned to do to her, he and Adian would take a long, long time ending Arobin's life.
She gazed across the city, toward the Assassin's Keep.
I told Lysandra she could do it.
Why?
She wrapped her arms around herself, hugging tight.
Because more than me, more than you or Adian, Lysandra deserves to be the one who ends him.
It was true.
Will she be needing our assistance?
She shook her head, spraying droplets of rain off the combs and the damp strands of hair that had come loose.
Kaol went to ensure everything goes fine.
Rowan allowed himself a moment to look at her, at the relaxed shoulders and uplifted chin, the grip she had on her elbows, the curve of her nose against the streetlight, the thin line of her mouth.
It feels wrong, she said, to still wish that there had been some other way.
She took an uneven breath, the air clouding in front of her.
He was a bad man,
she whispered.
He was going to enslave me to his will, use me to take over Terrasen, maybe make himself king, maybe sire my—
She shuddered so violently that light shimmered off the gold in her dress.
But he also— I also owe him my life. All this time I thought it would be a relief, a joy to end him. But all I feel is hollow and tired.
She was like ice when he slid an arm around her, folding her into his side.
Just this once.
Just this once he would let himself hold her. If he'd been asked to put down Maeve, and one of his cadre had done it instead, if Lorkin had done it, he would have felt the same. She twisted slightly to peer up at him, and though she tried to hide it, he could see the fear in her gaze, and the guilt.
I need you to hunt down Lorkin tomorrow, see if he's accomplished the little task I gave him.
If he'd killed those word hounds, or been killed by them, so she could at last free magic.
Gods, Lorkin was his enemy now.
He shut out the thought.
And if it's necessary to eliminate him?
He watched her throat bob as she swallowed.
It's your call then, Rowan. Do as you see fit.
He wished she'd told him one way or another, but giving him the choice, respecting their history enough to allow him to make that decision.
Thank you.
She rested her head against his chest, the tips of the bat wing combs digging into him enough that he eased them one at a time from her hair. The gold was slick and cold in his hands, and as he admired the craftsmanship, she murmured,
I want you to sell those and burn this dress.
As you wish,
he said, pocketing the combs.
Such a pity, though. Your enemies would have fallen to their knees if they ever saw you in it.
He'd almost fallen to his knees when he'd first seen her earlier tonight. She huffed a laugh that might have been a sob, and wrapped her arms around his waist, as if trying to steal his warmth. Her sodden hair tumbled down. The scent of her, jasmine and lemon verbena and crackling embers, rising above the smell of almonds to caress his nose, his senses. Rowan stood with his queen in the rain, breathing in her scent, and let her steal his warmth for as long as she needed. The rain lightened to a soft sprinkle, and Aelin stirred from where Rowan held her, from where she'd been standing, soaking up his strength, thinking. She twisted slightly to take in the strong lines of his face, his cheekbones gilded with the rain and the light from the street. Across the city, in a room she knew too well, Arobin was hopefully bleeding out, hopefully dead. A hollow thought, but also the clicking of a lock finally opened. Rowan turned his head to look at her, rain dripping off his silver hair, his features softened a bit, the harsh lines becoming more inviting.
Vulnerable, even.
Tell me what you're thinking,
he murmured.
I'm thinking that the next time I want to unsettle you, all I need to do is tell you how rarely I wear undergarments.
His pupils flared.
Is there a reason you do that, princess?
Is there any reason not to?
He flattened his hand against her waist, his fingers contracting once as if debating letting her go.
I pity the foreign ambassadors who will have to deal with you.
She grinned, breathless and more than a little reckless. Seeing that dungeon room tonight, she'd realized she was tired. Tired of death, and of waiting, and of saying goodbye. She lifted a hand to cup Rowan's face.
So smooth, his skin, the bones beneath strong and elegant.
She waited for him to pull back, but he just stared at her, stared into her in that way he always did. Friends, but more, so much more. And she'd known it longer than she wanted to admit. Carefully, she stroked her thumb across his cheekbone, his face slick with the rain. It hit her like a stone, the wanting. She was a fool to have dodged it, denied it, even when a part of her had screamed it every morning that she'd blindly reached for the empty half of the bed. She lifted her other hand to his face, and his eyes locked onto hers, his breathing ragged as she traced the lines of the tattoo along his temple. His hands tightened slightly on her waist, his thumbs grazing the bottom of her ribcage. It was an effort not to arch into his touch.
Rowan,
she breathed, his name a plea and a prayer. She slid her fingers down the side of his tattooed cheek, and, faster than she could see, he grabbed one wrist and then the other, yanking them away from his face and snarling softly. The world yawned open around her, cold and still. He dropped her hands as if they were on fire, stepping away, those green eyes flat and dull in a way she hadn't seen for some time now. Her throat closed up even before he said,
"Don't do that. Don't touch me like that."
There was a roaring in her ears, a burning in her face, and she swallowed hard.
"I'm sorry."
Oh, gods. He was over 300 years old, immortal, and she...
"I didn't mean..."
She backed away a step, toward the door on the other side of the roof.
"I'm sorry,"
she repeated. "It was nothing."
"Good,"
he said, going for the roof door himself.
"Fine."
Rowan didn't say anything else as he stalked downstairs. Alone, she scrubbed at her wet face, at the oily smear of cosmetics.
"Don't touch me like that."
A clear line in the sand. A line, because he was 300 years old, and immortal, and had lost his flawless mate. And she was young and inexperienced, and his Kerenom and queen, and he wanted nothing more than that. If she hadn't been so foolish, so stupidly unaware, maybe she would have realized that. Understood that though she'd seen his eyes shine with hunger, hunger for her, it didn't mean he wanted to act on it, didn't mean he might not hate himself for it. Oh, gods. What had she done? The rain sliding down the windows cast slithering shadows on the wooden floor, on the painted walls of Arobin's bedroom. Lysandra had been watching it for some time now, listening to the steady rhythm of the storm and to the breathing of the man sleeping beside her, utterly unconscious. If she were to do it, it would have to be now, when his sleep was deepest, when the rain covered up most sounds. A blessing from Temis, goddess of wild things, who had once watched over her as a shapeshifter, and who never forgot the caged beasts of the world. 3 words. That was all that had been written on the note Aelin slipped her earlier that night. A note still tucked into the hidden pocket of her discarded underwear. "He's all yours." A gift, she knew. A gift from the queen who had nothing else to give a no-name whore with a sad story. Lysandra turned onto her side, staring now at the naked man sleeping inches away, at the red silk of his hair spilled across his face. He'd never once suspected who had fed Aelin the details about Cormac, but that had always been her ruse with Arobin, the skin she'd worn since childhood. He had never thought otherwise of her vapid and vain behavior, never bothered to. If he had, he wouldn't keep a knife under his pillow and let her sleep in this bed with him. He hadn't been gentle tonight, and she knew she would have a bruise on her forearm from where he'd gripped her too tightly,
Victorious, smug, a king certain of his crown, he had